We'll tune in to the February 4, 2011 edition of the Rain Report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Shoveling out from 22 inches of the white stuff here in the greater Chicago area, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, with this Rain Report, the weekly ham radio audio feature magazine of the Radio Amateur Information Network. Tune around the lower portion of the HF ham bands and you'll hear an increasing number of digitized signals like and these are both eclectic technologies connected with WSJT, a digital mode Steve Ford, WB8IMY, featured in his January Eclectic Technology column published in QST, the official magazine of the ARRL, the National Organization of Amateur Radio. Steve happens to also be editor of QST and has been for some 10 years. Rain's Hep Holly, KC9RP, caught up with Steve the other day and talked about Steve's January column.
Well, Hap, my January QST Eclectic Technology column led with a story about WSJT, primarily because the latest version, which is version 9, had just been released at that time. It's a progression of what Joe Taylor, K1JT, has been doing since 2001 with this software. In version 9, he's added a new mode called ISCAT, I believe, and has made a number of other improvements to help its performance and so on. So I devoted at least the opening of the column to mentioning that this new release was out there and what it contained.
What is WSJT?
WSJT is not a single program by itself. It's really a suite of programs, or maybe a better way to put it is protocols within a single program, if you will. Most people are running it under Windows. However, it is also available for Linux. And I think some people may have recoded it for Mac, but I'm not terribly sure of that. Be that as it may, it's a suite of programs or a suite of functionality, if you want to call it that, that allows weak signal digital communication in a number of modes using a number of different protocols. For example, there is FSK441, which is primarily used for meteor scatter communication. There is JT65, which when the program was initially released, really earned the favor of the moon bounce community at that time. In just recent times, it has shown up on the HF bands as well. So WSJT is really, and again, I'm oversimplifying, but kind of a collection of programs all in one suite. It is also, I should point out, sound card based. That is, it uses a computer sound card or an outboard sound chip or chipset to do all the encoding and decoding for transmission and reception, respectively.
What is different about FSK441 compared to other meteor scatter software?
FSK441, first of all, again, is a digital protocol. It uses a number of different tones to communicate the information, which is typically a call sign and a signal report. It does this in such a way that it is capable of being decoded under extremely weak signal conditions. For meteor scatter prior to the debut of WSJT and the availability of FSK441 was mainly done using CW, high-speed CW in many cases, or if you were fortunate enough to be operating meteor scatter during a meteor shower when there were a lot of meteors coming in and they had very long burns, as they call them, you could use single sideband. I've made contacts that way, certainly. But I would say the revolutionary aspect of FSK441 and WSJT is that it made it possible to do meteor scatter communication at any time of the day or night and any day of the year. Prior to that, most meteor scatter was being done during meteor showers. That's understandable. However, as Joe Taylor told me, I call it cosmic debris, is constantly falling into our atmosphere from outer space. Depending on who you talk to, I saw one estimate that the Earth sweeps up something on the order of 100,000 pounds of the stuff every year. These are tiny, tiny microscopic bits of rock and metal that are impacting our atmosphere at hypersonic speeds. They burn up very quickly. I mean, in some cases, in a matter of milliseconds. But they leave behind an ionized trail, and that ionized trail will reflect radio signals over a given distance. So what Joe introduced with his software, really, was the ability to take advantage of meteor scatter communication at any time, because this material is coming into the atmosphere at any time. Granted, it's not constant. There are times when it is more dense than at others. But generally speaking, you can use his software to make contacts at almost any moment.
Now, what part of the frequency spectrum are we talking about for making these meteor scatter contacts?
Most of the activity takes place on 6 meters and 2 meters. On 6 meters, which is where my experience is, the calling frequency is 50.260. And if people take their radios up there, they're liable to hear on occasion some unusual signals, and chances are that's either FSK-441 or maybe ISCAT or something like that. The other band is 2 meters, and there's also a bit of activity, I believe, up on 222 megahertz.
For the newcomer to meteor scatter and perhaps amateur radio overall, what do you have to buy to get on meteor scatter?
Obviously, the first component is the transceiver itself. Fortunately, an awful lot of HF transceivers these days, as you know, HAP now includes 6 meters and even 2 meters in some cases. So you need that, obviously. And this is a multi-mode transceiver because you need to be transmitting in single sideband. The other component is obviously the computer and the software. The software is free for downloading on Joe's website. In fact, if you Google WSJT, he comes up in the first number of hits that you see. The third component is really probably one of the most vital, and that is the interface, the device that links the computer and the radio. Now, there is some confusion out there, which is understandable because, as many people know, your computer can control your radio. Many radios these days have computer software ports. They could be serial ports. Some even have USB. And you can connect these to your computer and use software to control your radio in the sense of changing frequency and doing all sorts of things. We're really not talking about that, however. What we're talking about in this instance is an interface that simply takes the sound from the computer that the software generates when you're transmitting and ports it over to the radio, not through a computer port, but, for example, through the accessory port that most radios have these days on the back of the radio. At the same time, this same interface is taking sound or audio from the radio and sending it to the computer for processing by the software. And then finally, the interface is handling the transmit-receive switching. That is, when the software, to put it one way, when the software wants to transmit, artificial intelligence, when it wants to transmit, it sends a command via the USB or the serial port. The interface receives that command, turns around, and keys the radio into the transmit mode, and then releases it at the appropriate time back into the receive mode. So the interface is a key device.
You are listening to a conversation with Steve Ford, WB8IMY, editor of QST Magazine and editor of its Eclectic Technology column. Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, will conclude his chat with Steve in a moment. This is The Rain Report, now on Twitter at twitter.com/TheRainReport. We'll be right back. I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, also on Twitter at twitter.com/Byron27.
Am I correct that the accessory jack on the back of many radios today are proprietary? That is, that if you buy the interface, that you'll have to attach your own connector on the end that goes into the radio with the appropriate accessory plug.
I would say that's largely correct, Hap, because the manufacturers use so many different types of plugs. To cite an example, my transceiver that I use here at home is a Kenwood TS-2000. It uses a 13-pin DIN connector for the accessory jack because all these pins are available that do various things. And so you need a 13-pin male DIN plug to plug into this. Well, these aren't extremely easy to find. They are out there. So if you were making your own interface, which you can certainly do, by the way, you would have to, yes, cobble together your own cable with one of those 13-pin DIN plugs. Now, on the other hand, commercial sound card interfaces that you might purchase from your favorite dealer or manufacturer, many of these folks now are offering custom cables. That is, they're cables already wired for your particular type of radio, so that when you order the interface, you can say, well, I have a Kenwood TS-2000. I need the cable for that as well. So then that comes with the interface, either as part of the cost or maybe as an extra charge. And you pretty much just plug all the cables together and away you go.
What is the advantage of buying a rather basic interface for this digital mode as opposed to one that has the chipset built into it?
I will go either way with this. I'm very much on the fence. I enjoy building my own interfaces, and at present, I'm using one that I just cobbled together myself from a collection of opto-isolators for the transmit-receive switching, and I have a couple of isolation transformers just to keep the audio as free of ground loop hum and whatnot that I possibly can. Having said that, commercially, if you don't want a homebrew, you can find a number of interfaces out there in a whole range of prices and complexity. There are interfaces from West Mountain Radio, MFJ, and some others that are very, very simple and probably cost less than $50 that really just pretty much handle the transmit-receive switching. They use serial port connections to your computer. There are other interfaces, however, from manufacturers such as Tigertronics, Microham, Rig Expert, and a few others that have the sound chipset already built into them. In other words, these interfaces are actual sound devices. They do not depend on the sound card in your computer or your laptop in any way. So these units connect directly to your computer through a USB cable in most instances, and then they connect to your radio. But all of the sound processing is done within the interface, which is kind of handy in the sense that you don't have to tie up the sound card in your computer for an amateur radio application. If you're like me, my primary computer is used not just by me, but by my daughter and my wife. They sometimes would get annoyed if one of my pieces of ham software is doing something unusual with the computer. It's handy to be able to separate the two. One thing I would point out, and I'm sure, Hap, you know this as well, many computers these days are doing away with serial ports. In fact, it's getting awfully hard to find a computer that comes with a serial port. If you're lucky, you can add one later, but that's about it. So as a result, many people are looking for interfaces that are USB-based that you just plug in. And again, that would be the ones traditionally now with the sound chipsets built in.
Now, when you talk about making a content on Media Scatter, it is ever so brief. It is not an actual conversation, is it?
Well, that's correct, and that's a good point, Hap. I always forget to point that out. The FSK-441 Meteor Scatter contacts, the Moon Bounce contacts made with JT-65, and on HF, by the way, they're using JT-65 on HF also these days. All of these contacts are just simple exchanges of the necessary information to call it a valid contact. That is, a call sign and a signal report. Sometimes you can send other little bits of information. For example, on JT65 on HF, I've seen people send a quick little string of characters that'll say something like 10 watts to a vertical antenna, something of that nature. But it's difficult, just the nature of what is going on, really, these transient, weak signals. It's difficult to carry on a conversation like you and I are now, or like you and I might have on HF or on a repeater. So really, all you're doing with these modes is exchanging just the basic information to say, yes, I made a contact.
I'm speaking today with Steve Ford, WB8IMY, the editor of QST, and the editor of the Eclectic Technology column in that magazine that appears every month. We'll be right back. This is the Rain Report. As far as being able to dig those really weak signals out of the noise, which mode is better, WSJT or PSK-31?
Oh, you give me a controversial question, Hap. I would say In terms of digging a signal out of the noise, a very weak signal, again, just enough to make a valid contact, I would say FSK-441 or JT-65, the WSJT modes, if you will, are superior to PSK-31. On the other hand, with PSK-31, you can carry on complete conversations.
It's really apples and oranges, isn't it?
Yes, I would say so. I mean, people who want to enjoy a conversation with somebody, DX, what have you, and especially if they operate under severe antenna restrictions where they can only have a wire in the attic or something of that nature and only run maybe 20, 30, 40 watts, PSK-31 is an excellent mode. It's like CW in that sense, that it performs very well under weak signal conditions, and you can certainly have it in the sense that you enjoy lengthy conversations with people. If your goal, however, is just to simply make a contact to perhaps qualify for an award, such as DXCC, VUCC, something of that nature, or just for the curiosity to see who is hearing you and how far your signal could go, then these modes, whether it's Meteor Scatter, Moon Bounce, or JT-65 on HF, are certainly a lot of fun and certainly valid. Just this week, I made a contact with a station in the Ukraine, and this was on JT-65 on 40 meters. I was running 10 watts to my vertical antenna in the backyard. It was astonishing that he did hear me, and he gave me the signal report, which, by the way, in JT-65, you get an actual signal report in dB. In other words, you can discover how you are being received at the other station's end. So I was 20 dB down in the Ukraine, which is pretty weak, but just the fact that he was able to decode me with just 5 watts was impressive, and that he told me that he was also just running 5 watts, and I believe he said that he was using a rhombic. That was it. We satisfied our mutual curiosities there, to be sure, even though we didn't have a traditional conversation.
Besides your eclectic technology column in QST, where's another good source for reading about Meteor Scatter and other digital modes?
Well, there are a couple of other sources. There is the 2011 ARRL handbook, which has a complete section devoted to that. There is the ARRL VHF digital handbook. I am presently working on an article for QST about JT-65 on the HF bands, because that seems to be getting an increasing amount of interest, primarily from people who hear the unusual signals and then they call League headquarters saying, "What is this?" So I thought I'd better write an article addressing that.
Steve, if someone would like to contact you, what email address would they use?
Yep, that would be my address at the office at League headquarters, and that is S, as in Steve, S Ford, F-O-R-D, at ARRL.org. S Ford, or phonetically, Sierra, Foxtrot, Oscar, Romeo, Delta, at ARRL.org.
QST Magazine editor and eclectic technology columnist Steve Ford, WB8IMY, speaking with Rains Hapali, KC9RP, about WSJT and other meteor scatter modes in amateur radio. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2011. Rain, all rights reserved. Now for everybody connected with Rain, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.